The carved runes along its length began to burn with silver and scarlet light as the power built up in it. A white court vampire is practically a pussycat compared to some of the other breeds on the planet, but I'd once seen one of them twist a pair of 50-pound steel dumbbells around one another to make a point. I might not have much time to throw down on Barrowill in these narrow quarters, and my best chance was to put him down hard the instant I saw him. I moved forward as silently as I knew how, stepping around a pair of couples who were breaking some sort of municipal statute, I was sure. Then I leaned back and kicked open the door to Irwin's room. The place looked like a small tornado had gone through it. Books and clothing and bedclothes and typical dorm room decor had been scattered everywhere. The chair next to a small study desk had been knocked over. A laptop computer lay on its side, showing what I'd once been told was a blue screen of death. The bed had fallen onto its side where two of the legs appeared to have snapped off. Connie and Irwin were there, and the haze of lust rolling off the ingenue succubus was a second psychic cyclone. I barely managed to push away. Irwin had her pinned against the wall in a corner. His muscles strained against his skin, and his breath came in dry, labored gasps, but he never stopped moving. He wasn't being gentle, and Connie apparently didn't mind. Her eyes were a shade of silver, metallic silver, as if they'd been made of chrome, reflecting the room around her like tiny, warped mirrors. She'd sunk her fingers into the drywall to the second knuckle on either side of her to hang on, and her body was rolling in a strained arch in time with his motion. They were gratuitously enthusiastic about the whole thing, and I hadn't gotten laid in forever.
"Irwin!"
I shouted. Shockingly, I didn't capture his attention.
"Connie!"
I didn't capture hers either. I couldn't let the process continue. I had no idea how long it might take or how resistant to harm Irwin might be, but it would be stupid to do nothing and hope for the best. While I was trying to figure out how to break it up before someone lost an eye, I heard the door of the room across the hall open behind me. The sights and sounds and the haze of psychic influence had my mental processes running at less than peak performance. I didn't process the sound into a threat until Barrowill slugged me on the back of the head with something that felt like a lump of solid ivory. I don't even remember hitting the floor. When I woke up, I had a Sasquatch-sized headache. My wrists and ankles were killing me. Half a dozen of Barrowill's goons were literally kneeling on me to hold me down. Every single one of them had a knife pressed close to one of my major arteries. Also, my pants had shrunk by several sizes. I was still in Irwin's dorm room, but things had changed. Irwin was on his back on the floor, Connie astride him. Her features had changed, shifted subtly. Her skin seemed to glow with pale light. Her eyes were empty white spheres. Her cheekbones stood out more harshly against her face, and her hair was a sweat-dampened wild mane that clung to her cheeks and her parted lips. She was moving as if in slow motion, her fingernails digging into Irwin's chest. Barrowill's psychic assault was still underway, and Connie's presence had become something so vibrant and penetrating that for a second I thought there might have been a minor earthquake going on. I had to get to that girl. I had to. If I didn't, I was going to lose my mind with need. My instant reaction upon opening my eyes was to struggle to get closer to her on pure reflex. The goons held me down, and I screamed in protest. But at least being a captive, it kept me from doing something stupid and gave me an instant's cold realization that my shields were down. I threw them up again as hard as I could, but the Barrowills had been in my head too long. I barely managed to grab hold of my reason. The kid looked awful. His eyes were glazed. He wasn't moving with Connie so much as his body was randomly shaking in independent spasms. His head lolled from one side to the other, and his mouth was open. A strand of drool ran from his mouth to the floor. Barrowill had righted the fallen chair. He sat upon it with one ankle resting on his other knee, his arms folded. His expression was detached, clinical, as he watched his daughter killing the young man she loved.
Barrowill,
I said. My voice came out hoarse and rough.
Stop this!
The vampire directed his gaze to me and shook his head. It's after midnight, Dresden. It's time for Cinderella to return to her real life.
You son of a bitch, I snarled. She's killing him.
A small smile touched one corner of his mouth. Yes, beautifully. Her hunger is quite strong. He made a vague gesture with one hand. Does he seem upset about it? He's immortal, and mortals are all born to die. The only question is how and in how much pain.
There's this life thing that happens in between, I snarled.
And many more where his came from. Barrowill's eyes went chill. His and yours.
What do you mean?
When she's finished, we leave. Your dessert. A lump of ice settled in my stomach, and I swallowed. All things considered, I was becoming a little worried about the outcome of this situation.
Talk, Harry. Keep him talking. You've never met a vampire who didn't love the sound of his own voice. Something could change the situation if he played for time.
Why not do it before I woke up? I asked. This way is more efficient, Barrowill said. If a young athlete takes ecstasy and his heart fails, there may be a candlelight vigil, but there won't be an investigation. Two dead men, one of them a private investigator, there will be questions. He shrugged a shoulder. And I don't care for you to bequest me your death curse, wizard. But once Connie has you, you won't have enough left of your mind to speak your own name, much less utter a curse.